Thank you. Hi, y'all. You better come to life out there. Are you having a good time? Say yeah. Yeah. Anybody here from Locust Grove, Oklahoma? I promised you I'd bring your name up. I was at their school the other day. I'm so happy to be with you. I would say you look marvelous, darling, but I can't see you at all. So if it's okay, and if they can, they can bring the house lights up for me. I didn't realize it'd be this dark. Oh, there you are. Don't you look beautiful? And I'm going to try not to fall off this stage. Well, I'm happy to see you. My name is Dave Reaver. I headquartered out of Fort Worth, Texas. Sometimes I live in Colorado, sometimes in Texas, mostly in the Hilton. So wherever I am is where I am. And honestly, teachers and all you sponsors, thank you for what you've done to make it possible for all these young folks to be here. I love the FFA. It's my favorite group in the whole world, and that's the truth. That's the truth. I got to tell you something. FFA doesn't know it, but I am their number one public relations person. I talk about you everywhere I go, and every 4 or 5 years, I get called back with a whole bunch of brand new kids that don't know who the heck I am. And it's okay if you leave those lights up. I don't mind you just leaving them up. I like to see their little faces. And you know what else? Every time I come to the FFA, I am re-inspired. Now, I'm just going to say that again. I am re-inspired for the future of the United States of America, because you are not just the best. You're the best of the best. That is not paid speech. That is from my heart to your heart. So help me God, I mean every word of it. You're the best of the best. But I know you're looking me over. Some of you, I don't know, you got a big screen up here? Sure do. There I am. Look close. You're wondering, what in the world happened to me? Well, I was looking you over, and I was wondering. No, dude, I'm serious. I shouldn't do that. I was wondering how you were doing. And I'm not that old. 64 is not old. I'm still mentally 19. And I refuse to change. And look, I fell in love at 16, and I don't mean puppy love that leads to a dog's life. I'm talking about the real thing, man, real love. And I asked her to marry me, and she slapped me. I'm 16 years old. She slapped me. She said, well, I'm only 13 years old. I said, I know, but you have the body of a 14-year-old. She slapped me again. Life's just not fair. So that's what I had in my face. My girlfriend slapped it right off my head. No, I'm kidding. Excuse me. I was injured in Vietnam, which means I'm a lucky one. A lot of people didn't get injured. They got killed. So I'm glad that I'm here today to talk to you and to share some of the experiences in my life that I hope will be a big encouragement in yours. Because there's not a better piece of ground to plant a seed of hope for the future in than the FFA, and I mean that. I hope to plant something positive in your life tonight, because you look at me and you can tell I've been down the road. I was injured tremendously. That is to say, a lot of my skin was blown off my body in a hand grenade explosion in Vietnam. But let's go back to that girl. There's something about talking about girls I kind of like to do. I mean, I married one. I still open the door for her and pull the chair back and let her sit down. I'm going to tell some of you young fellas out there, you want to really impress a woman? Well, go ahead. I won't stop you. Let those girls show their appreciation. Woohoo! Yeah. Well, see, if some of you guys will listen to me, I can give you some advice. I'm sowing in good ground. Here we go. Pull the chair back, open the door, but if you really want to win her heart, buy her flowers. And it's real simple, 1-800, and this is not a paid advertisement, 1-800-FLOWERS. And some of you are saying, dude, those things cost so much. Well, do what I do. Go to the cemetery. They're 1-800-FREE. Yeah. I'm kidding. You know what? The rest of the news is, my favorite word is if. Because she said to me, if you love me, You know what that meant? That meant she wasn't sure yet if I did or didn't, and the door of opportunity was still open. If you love me, you'll wait for me. I said, okay, I'll pick you up at 10 o'clock. I don't mind. I knew what she meant, and some of you will laugh at me, but a lot of you get it. She was saying, there won't be no sex before marriage. My jets were wide open. I was roaring down. I was possessed with the urge to merge, and she wasn't. And I found out no means no. Huh, girls? Now, come on, guys. Don't get mad at me, fellas. I'm picking on you, but I'm having a good time doing it, too. What America needs is one pregnant teenage boy. Tell me if that won't change the dating game. Well, here's the bottom line, guys. You treat a girl with respect now, and she'll love you for the rest of your life. Build your relationship on respect, not the backseat of a car, and tomorrow is yours. It belongs to you. Respect. These are things that build character in our lives. And I hope you'll stay with me. I know that was a little edgy, but you'll get over it. Here's the rest of the story. We waited. We got married. But then it was a question of, can we even allow ourselves to hope for a child? Because I got a notice telling me to go take my physical. I was being inducted into the United States Army. So help me, that was the last thing on my mind. Believe it or not, I was a Bible college student. My dad was a minister, and I was studying to follow in his footsteps. And they're telling me, go take your physical. We're going to send you to Vietnam. You're going to shoot people. Uh-uh. Not this boy, not in this life. So I went and took my physical, which was the only exam I passed that whole semester. I wasn't the best Bible college student you ever saw. But I took my physical, and they said I would be inducted. I'd be sworn in the next morning. I didn't show up the next morning. I didn't. Now, don't judge me yet. Wait till you hear it all. I went down and joined the Navy the next morning. That way they couldn't float a battleship in a rice paddy in Vietnam. I'm safe. I don't get hurt. I'm not made of heroic stuff. I mean, like, I played football in the ninth grade. It hurt so bad I quit and joined the band. Watched other kids get hurt. They're lined up to bleed. There you go. We the smart ones here. Well, that's part one. Part two is when I joined the Navy. Holy cow, they put me in the Special Forces training. They said, you went to college? I said, I was flunking out of Bible school. He said, no one else here went to college? I said, well, I'm sorry, sir. You went to college? I said, sir, yes, I had below sea level grades. It was the Navy. I thought he'd catch it. So they sent me to Naval Amphibious Base, Coronado, California. And I trained with three groups that were training there. The Brownwater Black Beret, the Special Dive Vehicle Teams, and the Navy SEALs. And they said, we're going to put you in the Brownwater Black Beret. I said, what is that? Said, you'll be attached to SEAL Team 1. We're going to send you to Vietnam. That's where you'll end up. And that's one of the few times they told me something that actually was the truth. And I ended up in Vietnam for 8 months as a riverboat gunner. They made a movie about us called Apocalypse Now. I don't recommend you watch it. It's rated R, and your tender little mind shouldn't be exposed to all that violence. Of course, you got games that teach us how to be violent. Truth is, that would be the turning point in my entire life, my entire future, my whole career would be built off of one paradigm shift in my life. From a kid that was so nonviolent, I never had a black eye, never had a fight. My parents never even argued in our presence, much less fought. I never heard a curse word pass my dad's lips. I never saw a bottle of alcohol in his or my mom's hand. I never one time was exposed to anything that would give me the idea that I could go down that route. So when people say, you were virgin when you married? I say, yeah. They say, why? I said, well, we didn't have a TV. Because my dad wouldn't have taught me that, but television would have. There's a lot of things your parents would never teach you. You're learning off the internet. You're learning off of television. I really urge you to be careful. Watch out what your little eyes see and what your ears hear and what you do, because it can get you in more trouble you can get out of. And I love you enough to stand up here and be honest with you. If you don't want that, you don't want me. I will tell you the truth. And if the truth isn't what you want, don't ever ask me back. The truth sets a person free. It keeps you from getting into stuff you can't get out of. Give me some support. I knew you thought that. On July the 26th, and I pause and think, do I want to tell you the year? When I tell you the year of my injury, 1969, your brain says right after the War of 1812. On July 26, 1969, and if some of your teachers consider that day, or pardon me, that year, not that far back, there's a lot of teachers here that are Vietnam veterans, and they never got a welcome home. They've never been given a thank you, and you'll sit in their classes and never hear them say one thing about the suffering, the trials, the difficulty of that war. And if you're a Vietnam veteran, sir, and you're in this house, ma'am, if you served in Vietnam, I can't bring you forward for time's sake, but I wish you would stand up and let your students thank you for your service to the freedom of the United States of America. Vietnam veterans, would you stand wherever you are in this room? There they are back there in the seats. Look up high, wherever you can see them. God bless you, Vietnam veterans, and welcome home. Welcome home. Well, that was an infamous day for me. On that 26th of July, I picked up a White Phosphorus hand grenade. I had a bad feeling. Something was wrong, and I didn't know what. I've never smoked a joint. I've never snorted coke. I've never put a needle in my vein. I've never taken a pill to get high. I could hallucinate on a half dosage of a St. Joseph's aspirin for children. So I've never had my feelings altered by chemical abuse. This much I will tell you. Something was drastically wrong that day, and I knew it. And I'm glad I wasn't under the effect or impact of something, of a drug or an alcohol that would have dulled my senses. I wouldn't have survived what happened, but that day I sensed something was around me. I didn't know what. I couldn't see them, hear them, smell them, but I reached down and picked up a white phosphorus hand grenade that burns at 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit, and I pulled the pin. And I thought about it. Where do I want to throw this grenade? It'll burn down high brush. It'll detonate booby traps. It'll put up smoke, give me cover. And my job's to go down in that bunker and pull those enemy boys out alive, because dead men can't talk. So I drew back, and in 1 second, my life would change. Somewhere across the river, a sniper put me in the crosshairs of his scope, and he squeezed off around shooting in my head, but my hand got in the way, and when the bullet hit, it hit my hand, severed my thumb and index finger apart, detonated the grenade, and in 1 second, half my skin was gone off my body as 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit turned me to cooking bacon. I stood there in total disbelief and didn't have the slightest pain. I felt nothing. I went blind in my eye, went deaf in my ear. My hair was blown off. That's right. It's my hair. I bought it. And I've chased it across many a school parking lot on windy days, chasing this thing. It also blew my ear off. It's artificial. It's really cool. I leave it in some schools just to see what they say about me when I'm gone. Yeah. As a result of my experience, the Department of Defense has taken on sending me to all the different places in the war zone. I started out in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Afghanistan, and then finally into Iraq. And I've done 6 tours in the Middle East with our troops, 5 of them in Iraq, 1 in Afghanistan. And I'll leave again after the first of the year for Afghanistan. They don't send me because I'm good looking, although that wouldn't hurt. You know, that's pretty good. It doesn't hurt. They don't send me because of my mighty military stance. This man, I'll be all right. They don't send me for my academic excellence. I was in the top 10% of the lower one-third of my class. But they send me because I've been shot up, mutilated, scarred, amputated. I'm a mess, and I know it. And I could show you the rest of my body, but then I'd either have to shoot you or charge you. Don't clap. Throw money. I said that one time when I was dodging nickels, dimes, and quarters. Don't you do that to me. Well, that grenade blew, and I jumped in the river. My skin was floating all around me. I was beside myself. I needed to pull myself together. Helicopter landed to pick me up, and they rolled me on the stretcher, and I was still burning It ripped open. I fell through on my head. You ever have one of those days? Nothing goes right. They rolled me up in wet blankets, got me on another stretcher, and away we went. And the medic thinks I'm dead, so he's filling out my death report. And under the blanket, I'm thinking, boy, this is hurting, and he's not helping me. He thinks I'm dead, and I said, medic. And when I did, he almost jumped out of that helicopter. The pilot lost control. We're dropping like a rock, and I thought, good Lord, we're going to crash, and I'll be the only survivor. They got me to Saigon and then to Japan, and I asked for a mirror, which was stupid, and they brought it, which was stupid. And I looked up in the glass, and I saw what was left. And I knew she wouldn't love me. I knew it. No matter how good a start we had, it was over that day, and I couldn't find a way to believe otherwise. And I did something I'm ashamed of. Look right at me. Don't let anyone even speak to you right now. You look right at me. I want your absolute, teetotal, undivided attention, not one distraction. When you lose hope, you lose everything. Never, never, never give up hope. I lost hope that day because I knew she wouldn't love me. When they walked away with the mirror, they showed me my face in. This side was skull, this side swollen to my shoulder. I knew she wasn't going to love that. And I tried to kill myself. I'm ashamed of that. I didn't have a gun or a knife. How do you kill yourself in the hospital when there's tubes hanging out of every orifice of your body and some orifices you didn't have before you got hurt? What do you do? I pulled the tube, man. I laid my head back and I waited to die. And I got hungry. It was the wrong tube. I'll pull lunch. You can die that way, but it's going to take a while. And if you smell a pizza cooking, you're plugging that tube back in. You don't really want to die. Listen to me say it again. You don't really want to die. Suicide is no solution. It's the second thought that killed you. Never give suicide a second thought. Come on, give me some support in this room. I love you. You're a hope for tomorrow. Don't give up hope. So they sent me to America and put me at Brooke Army Medical Center. I was there for a year and 2 months. Everybody in my room died. We called it death row because we knew when we went in there, they didn't want us dying out there where everybody else was, and we would discourage them by dying. It was called the ICU, and I didn't know what that meant until they brought me a robe one day. I finally learned to walk again. It doesn't even come together in the back. It's the ICU. Yeah. See, I'm smart. I learned medical stuff, man. I know that medical lingo. That first day, a woman came in to see the guy in the bed next to mine. He was next in round robin. He would be the last person before my wife was permitted to come see me. That woman walked up to his bed, took off her ring, her wedding ring, threw it on the bed, and she walked out saying, "You're embarrassing. I couldn't walk down the street with you." My heart, honest to God, I think it stopped for a moment. And I said, "Oh, God, no, please. She's out there. It's going to happen. She's going to leave me." And I looked around to see which tube would be the right one this time. And before I could choose, she was standing at the foot of my bed. Holy cow, forgive my carnality. She was in a mini skirt. I said, "Doc, I'm getting better." She bent down and kissed what was left of my face. She looked me in my good eye and she said, "I just want you to know I love you. Welcome home, Davy." And when she says, "Davy, hey, 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 man," I was home. My hope came back. Love made all my scars go away. Do you hear me? The power of love is not a sexual attraction. It's that permanent commitment that makes everything in your life, whether it's a sexual relationship or a business relationship, whatever it is, love makes it work. Build your relationships on love. It lasts for a lifetime. She's with me at this convention. Unfortunately, she's over at the booth where we have our book and a few items. I'll try to mention that before I leave here, but she's over there. But I want you to go by and meet her. She would love to meet you. And they let me go one day. I walked out of that hospital, suitcase in one hand, sweetheart in the other, and I did really, really well right up to 9/11. And when I saw those aircraft flying those buildings, I knew that my life was not over. All the schools I had done, over 7 million students in 35 years, I don't go anywhere in the Middle East on those tours for Department of Defense, but what soldiers come up to me, girls and guys, "Mr. Reaver, you came to my school. You came to my academy. You spoke at West Point. You spoke at the Citadel. You spoke at Annapolis. I was there, Mr. Reaver. I remember your story." I'm going to tell you something. At 64, I have only just begun, and I'm just now coming into my stride. 64 is the best year I've ever lived. Yeah! Look at you. You got it. So when they called and asked me to go, I didn't have to think about it. I said, "Let me pray about it. Amen, sure." And they sent me downrange. And there my life would take drastic changes. And I'll be back in just a minute to tell you about that. But right now, in fact, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to stay with him. I want you to meet one of my warriors. He was not injured in Iraq or Afghanistan or Kuwait. He was injured in a horrible way that only he can tell you about. He's never served a day in the military, but he's one of the best warriors I've ever trained, and I've trained hundreds of warriors out of the war of Iraq and Afghanistan, and I have him on the road today speaking in schools and in military installations, churches, schools, and university. But this guy, he's special. I want you to put your hands together for my friend, one of the best friends I've ever had, Brad Herring. Come on out here, Brad.
National FFA Convention, it's my honor and my privilege to be able to be here with you tonight. It's awesome to be in a room with so many great young Americans right here. I'm so honored to be here. I'm so blessed to have a man like Dave Reaver who believed in a young man. A young man that was, whenever I was brought to him, I was in a wheelchair. I was still bleeding. I was still weeping. I couldn't feed myself, but he believed in me. See, I wasn't injured in an honorable way. I wasn't injured in a tragic war in Iraq or in a tragic car accident. I wasn't injured in Iraq or Afghanistan. But on January 7th, 2003, I was burned while manufacturing methamphetamines. Meth. A drug epidemic that is sweeping across our nation right now. A drug that only one out of eight that ever try it, ever recover from it. A drug that 98.9% of people who try it will be addicted the rest of their life. 98.9. It's scary, scary stuff. But I didn't just wake up one morning and think, you know what, this morning, I'm going to be a meth addict. This morning, I'm going to jam a needle in my arm. I'm going to shoot up drugs. I'm going to get high. See, I'm a farm boy from Kansas. My grandparents have a 10,000-acre farm in southwest Kansas. Last fall, we cut 1,365,000 bushels of corn, guys. That's a lot of Frosted Flakes, isn't it? Methamphetamines is the first drug epidemic that we've ever seen hit our rural communities, our farm boys. And that's exactly what I was a farm boy. Whenever I was in third grade, though, we moved to Houston, Texas. My dad did. And whenever I got to Houston, Texas, I didn't fit in, needless to say. I was into John Deere tractors and John Deere combines. These kids were into Lexuses and Mercedes. I didn't even know what a Lexus or a Mercedes even was, guys. Honest truth. My buddy walked up to me one day and says, "Brad, have you seen that new LS400 Lexus?" And I looked at him and I said, "What's that, some new type of tractor?" Where I came from, it was JD 4630, JD 4850. That stands for John Deere 4630, John Deere 4850. So LS400 had the right amount of letters and the right amount of numbers. It should have been a tractor, right? Wrong. I didn't fit in, guys. And so what did I do? I started to walk away from the things that I knew to be right and true in my life. I started to run around with the wrong crowd. There's a coined phrase out there, young people, that says this: "Show me your friends and I will show you your future." Let me repeat it to you one more time. Show me your friends and I will show you your future. If you're running around with a whole bunch of knuckleheads right now, I guarantee you it's not going to be long till you start to fall into that same rut that they are in life. And let me tell you what a rut is, young people. A rut is a grave with both ends knocked out of it. But through the choices and friends that I made, and through the choices to start using marijuana and smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol, I found myself at the age of 19, addicted to methamphetamines, shooting up drugs, and inevitably in a meth lab explosion, it brought me into a tenth of a percent chance of my life. But I don't want you to feel sorry for me, young people, because I am not a victim. I am a survivor. I am a survivor from one of the most dangerous. I am a survivor from the most addictive drug of all times, and I am a survivor from the third and fourth degree burns on 80% of my body. I'm a survivor. Check me out at bradherron.com and Brad Herron on Facebook. You guys look it up. Love you. Thank you.
Woo. Come on, let me hear you show Brad your appreciation. That is not easy to do, what he just did. You have no idea what it takes for him to stand out here mutilated and tell you something that may change your life. We're looking for a drug-free, alcohol-free FFA that can live their life because they're man enough, woman enough to do it without chemical inspiration. I want to hear somebody agree with me. Yes. Yes. And that means I love you, but my thumb got blown off. They made that out of my hip. I don't know if it's a thumb or a hip. I don't suck it, I'll tell you that. But that means I love you, but I speak sign language with a lisp. It means I love you. I'm going to leave here in just a minute, but I want to do something right quick. I want to let you know that I have a book over in the convention, or whatever that place is called over there, the shopping mall. It's titled Nobody's Ever Cried For Me. It's the lead story of a little girl raped by her stepfather, and her story will blow your mind. It blew mine. As I counseled her with her counselor present, I learned long ago in counseling, you never touch a child. You never touch those that you counsel. But when she told me what had happened, I lost all that inhibition. I threw my arms around her, snotted all over her sleeve, and she was patting me on the back saying, it's okay, mister, you'll be fine. You'll see, we have a counselor here. Oh, you guys drive me crazy. And the hurt and the pain that some of you go through, this book will be a massive assistance to you and support you to get through some of those things. Also, teachers, please know, we have a presentation in the school. It is a-religious, non-religious, and it is a powerful presentation from a public school that is now believed to be in over 30,000 schools distributed by the United States Army Junior ROTC. Get one and take back your school. And then finally, on my wrist, I wear a little bracelet. Some of you may already have one. If you have a brother or a dad that's downrange, that is in the war zone, mine was made for me by my medic in Iraq, and I just came home with it this year. I brought 8,000 of these bracelets, and you have the opportunity to pick one up back there at that where our booth is, and I'm sorry I'm not good at you. You go in, and we're the first door to the right. You go in there, and you get one of these. There's a card in there. There are no addresses, and I do not want you to put any addresses on it. I want you to just simply write a thank you to a warrior. And I will take it after the first of the year when I go into Afghanistan, and I will personally deliver from the FFA a thank you for serving. And they're the reason there will be no Taliban hand grenade in this room. There will be no Al-Qaeda truck bomb in your parking lot because the United States military stood up all night watching over you, and we owe them. Come on. That's what I'm talking about. Respect. That's what I'm talking about. That's the FFA I know. God bless our military. Now here's what I need you to do, and you can be seated. I'm going to close with one final thought, but I do want to tell you, after this session, you've only got about a half hour to get over there and get your bracelet, but you can also pick them up tomorrow. Pass the word. These bracelets are a statement to people across this nation, and especially to our troops, that they have one end of this rope. It's parachute cord, 550-pound parachute cord. And they have one end of the rope. We have the other, and we're going to pull them home safe. Rightio? That's what our goal. That's what the bracelet means. Now, listen. I held a young warrior in my arms not long ago. He was hit by a rocket. He was burned 100% third degree. No skin left on his body. And as he was still smoldering, I held him in my arms. And I whispered in the hole in the side of his head where his ear had been. And I said, "You're more than a soldier. You are a sacrifice on the altar of freedom. And I'm here on behalf of a grateful nation to tell you thank you." He shuddered. His last breath went through two holes on the front of his head where his nose had been. And a 19-year-old from Indianapolis, Indiana, gave his life so we could be free tonight. God bless America. God bless our military. And God bless the FFA. I love you.